in 2023, millions of dollars in commercial real estate just completely vanished into thin air.
Just totally gone.
Yeah. But the craziest part about this massive disappearance is that the buildings themselves, they never actually moved.
Right. They were still right there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the skyscrapers, the retail plazas, the multifamily units, they were all sitting right there in New Jersey. Brick and steel, exactly where they had always been.
So it wasn't the concrete that disappeared?
No, it wasn't. It was the illusion of who actually owned it. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are opening a file that, you know, it kind of fundamentally changes how you understand trust, investment, and this digital illusion of wealth.
It really is a profound shift in the landscape. I mean, we are moving away from a world of verifiable hard assets into this highly dangerous territory that's driven, well, almost entirely by algorithmic clout.
Right.
And the mechanics of how that transition happens, they're just hidden in plain sight.
Yeah. And to understand those mechanics, we are reviewing a strictly private investigative report today. We're acting as observers here, looking through case file. The Influencer Premium, which covers the Caesar Pina Ponzi scheme.
Which is a fascinating read.
It really is. This case file comes directly from the archives of the Midnight Ledger. It was compiled by Priyanshu Adithakar. He's known as Priyit in the industry. And he is a commercial real estate advisor, an investment specialist, and a fellow realtor.
And, you know, that is the exact lens required for a case like this. Priyit isn't just some armchair analyst looking at social media posts.
Wait, he's actually in the trenches.
Exactly. As a commercial realtor and an investment advisor, he is the one actually solving the complex zoning riddles on the ground. He's digging through county records, clearing the technical hurdles that stall major legitimate deals.
So he knows what to look for.
Yeah, he understands what a real asset sheet looks like, which is why his forensic teardown of this specific fraud is so devastatingly clear. Our role here is just to analyze Pri's findings from the ground.
Right. And the subject of Pri's case file number, ML2026-CCCP. For anyone unfamiliar with the timeline, this is the guy who built the wildly viral Flipping NJ brand back in 2018.
Yeah, he was everywhere.
He really was. And he rode that massive 2020 pandemic market surge with an incredibly aggressive seminar circuit. But it all came crashing down in 2023.
With an FBI raid, right?
Yep, an FBI raid, a wire fraud indictment, and millions upon millions in investor capital simply gone.
So the mission for our deep dive today is to figure out exactly how a supposedly ironclad 40-property commercial empire could just evaporate.
Because Pina couldn't rely on the actual math to close these deals.
Yeah.
He had to hack his audience's psychology.
Yeah.
And Pri's isolated exactly how he did it.
So you have to start by looking at the environment Pina constructed, right?
Yeah. To understand the mechanics of this massive fraud, Pri's investigation shows we first have to examine the bait.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because typical commercial real estate pitches are, well, they're fundamentally unsexy.
Very much so. I mean, when you think about a legitimate syndication or a commercial pitch, it's usually happening in this quiet, slightly overly air-conditioned conference room. You're looking at a pro forma.
And for anyone not living in the ledgers every day, a real pro forma isn't just a basic spreadsheet.
Right. It's way more complex.
It is a rigid, mathematically verified timeline. It looks at historical rent rolls, operating expenses, projected property taxes, capital expenditures, and it spits out a highly scrutinized projected yield.
Which is pretty dry.
Dry, methodical, and boring. Methodical is the perfect word here. Legitimate commercial real estate is slow. It's rooted in tangible metrics that can be audited by a third party.
But Pri's field report paints a picture of Pina's operation that is the exact opposite of that reality. I mean, reading through his notes from the ground, the environment Pina created was closer to, like, an exclusive Vegas nightclub.
Or the VIP tent at a music festival.
Exactly. Pri knows that these hotel ballrooms were thick with the scent of expensive cologne. You had world-famous BJs spinning tracks to hype up the crowd.
It's wild to think about that for a real estate pitch.
It really is. And there's Caesar Pina commanding the stage, treating real estate not as a slow yield investment, but as a lifestyle brand.
Mm.
He was standing under those club lights, promising an absurd 30% return in a matter of months.
What's fascinating here is that number. That 30% is where Pri, wearing his advisor hat, immediately flags the entire operation.
I think it's too high.
Way too high. A 30% return in a few months isn't investing. It's lottery math. If you are looking at a well-managed commercial asset, say a stabilized multifamily property.
Meaning the building is fully leased, renovations are done, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Tenant turnover is low. In that scenario, you are thrilled with an annualized return in the high single digits.
Right. Or maybe, you know, low double digits if you executed some forced appreciation.
Precisely. Forced appreciation means you bought a distressed property, you injected capital to fix the roof, upgrade the units, which allows you to raise the rents.
And raising the rents increases the net operating income, or NOI.
Right. And since commercial buildings are valued based on the income they generate, increasing the NOI forces the overall value of the building up.
Okay, I follow.
But even in a wildly successful forced appreciation scenario, getting a 30% return in a matter of months is mathematically impossible without taking on just catastrophic levels of risk.
Yet Pina pitched it brilliantly to middle-class investors. He framed this impossible math as the ultimate secret exit ramp from the rat race.
Yeah, he really knew his audience.
He did. According to Pree's evidence file, the pitch included guaranteed monthly cash flow, direct ownership of high-value assets, and these so-called no-risk property flipping models.
But what Pray makes incredibly clear in the Midnight Ledger is that the actual mathematical reality of those promises was entirely irrelevant to the crowd in that ballroom.
Because they weren't looking at spreadsheets.
Exactly. Because he wasn't selling the pro forma. He was selling what Pray identifies as the clout.
Oh, wow. The visual proof. The private jets. The custom-tailored suits. The verified blue checks on social media.
That's it. The audience wasn't buying into a verifiable real estate model. They were buying the feeling of having real estate. They wanted to be adjacent to that verified lifestyle.
And this is where the environment itself does the heavy lifting, right? Mm. In Pree's analysis, the audience's critical thinking was being systematically dismantled by the sensory overload of the pitch.
Yeah, the flashing lights, the music.
Right. When you are standing in a room with a pulsing bass line, surrounded by hundreds of people cheering, and the guy on stage just stepped off a private jet, your brain stops asking to see the title insurance. You start asking where to wire the money.
It's a complete psychological hijack.
But I have to play devil's advocate here for a second, though. It's very easy for us to sit here with the case file open and say, oh, the math didn't make sense in hindsight. But if you're a middle-class investor, and you see this guy stepping off a private jet with a massive radio star, doesn't it make a twisted kind of sense to assume that someone, a bank, a high-powered lawyer, the SEC, has already vetted him? I mean, why wouldn't people check the paperwork? Isn't it wild that people will skip basic background checks just because someone is standing next to a celebrity they hear on the radio?
That is the exact question Pree sought to answer in Section 3 of his report, which covers the psychological vectors of manipulation. And your devil's advocate point hits the nail on the head.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Pree isolated two specific psychological vectors that Pina weaponized to ensure nobody checked the paperwork. The first one is what Pree categorizes as celebrity proxy trust.
Because Pina wasn't just posting pictures of buildings, he was constantly appearing alongside household names, like massive figures in the music industry, syndicated radio hosts, cultural icons.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture of how the human brain processes information, it all comes down to heuristics.
Heuristics, like mental shortcuts.
Exactly. Heuristics are the mental shortcuts our brains use to save energy when making decisions. In a typical cold calling scam, if a stranger asks you for $50,000, your guard is immediately up.
Right. The internal alarm is blaring. You demand proof, you want contracts, you want references.
But by utilizing celebrity proxy trust, Pina completely bypassed that alarm system. We use the celebrity as a human audit. The victim outsources their critical diligence to the famous person standing next to the promoter.
So essentially, our brains are lazy. The investors made a fatal subconscious assumption. If this incredibly famous, wealthy person trusts Cesar Pina, then a team of lawyers and accountants must have already vetted him.
Yes. They assume the celebrity's presence is the due diligence. Mm-hmm. They borrow the trust.
It's like assuming a VIP wristband makes someone a certified financial genius. I mean, you would never let a radio DJ perform open-heart surgery on you, but you'll let their buddy manage your entire life savings just because they took a photo together on a tarmac.
It is a profound vulnerability in human psychology. And once that proxy trust was established, Pina deployed the second vector Pree identified.
Which was?
The inner circle scarcity.
Oh, right. Pina used intense high-pressure tactics, claiming that spots for these secret commercial flips were highly limited.
Yes, he weaponized FOMO.
Right. He wasn't asking for your money. He was offering you a rare, fleeting privilege to be in his inner circle.
It is the complete weaponization of artificial scarcity. Pree notes that this tactic creates a psychological pressure cooker. It forces the investor to frantically wire funds just to secure their spot.
Before they even think it through.
Exactly. The panic of missing the opportunity completely overrides the instinct to verify the asset. It specifically prevents them from slowing down long enough to consult a legitimate advisor or real estate attorney.
Okay, but wait, walk me through that mechanism. If I go to buy a duplex down the street, the bank and the title company are going to scrutinize every single piece of paper.
No.
There is a mountain of friction designed to protect the transaction.
Sure is.
So how is a guy moving tens of millions of dollars without triggering those same alarms? How do you bypass a title company?
That is where we get into the actual financial flow of the scheme. You bypass the title company by changing what you are actually selling. Pina wasn't putting these everyday investors on the deed of a commercial property.
What were they buying them?
They were buying membership units in an LLC, a shell company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The pitch was that the LLC controlled the property, and by buying into the LLC, you owned a piece of the building. But the investors owned paper in a shell company, not dirt in New Jersey.
So the deed to the actual property never changes hands in that transaction.
Exactly. Which means the title company isn't triggered, the traditional bank underwriters aren't looking at the individual investors, and the standard friction of a real estate transaction is completely removed.
So they were buying an illusion. And here's where it gets really interesting. That brings us to evidence number 40, PPL and prize file.
The portfolio claim.
Right. Pina claimed to have this massive 40-property portfolio. Claiming 40 commercial properties isn't just about sounding rich. It's about luring institutional-scale funds. It creates the mirage of a massive, diversified safety net.
It makes them look too big to fail.
Exactly. But when Pri actually did the asset analysis, when he went digging through the local county records, tracking the LLCs and looking at the actual properties, he discovered that the real equity was near zero.
Near zero. It is staggering when you look at Pri's forensic accounting. He broke down the financial flow of over $10 million in recent transactions linked to this operation.
And what did he find?
What his investigation into the ledger shows is that less than 5% of that capital was ever allocated to actual property maintenance, structural improvements, or legitimate real estate operations.
Less than 5%. Let's think about the mechanics of that. If you own a massive commercial building and you are spending virtually nothing on capital expenditures, like no roof repairs, no HVAC maintenance, no parking lot resurfacing, what happens to that building?
It decays rapidly. A commercial building with no CapEx budget is essentially a melting ice cube. It will inevitably fail.
Yeah.
But as Pri points out, the physical buildings in the scenario were practically irrelevant to the operation. They weren't generating the returns. They were just the physical locations used to anchor the fantasy.
So the business wasn't real estate?
No. The business was selling the vibe of real estate.
I need to clarify this because it's the absolute core of the deception. This influencer premium literally just meant taking the investor's money to buy the private jet hours, the custom suits, and to rent out the lavish hotel ballrooms, simply to create the marketing material required to trap the next wave of victims.
Yes. What Pri uncovered is that the capital raised for Property A was almost immediately diverted.
Wow.
Some of it was used to pay fake dividends to the early investors of Property B to keep them quiet and happy. But a massive portion of it was funneled into sustaining the extravagant lifestyle required to maintain the clout. It is a self-funding illusion.
It's a paper merry-go-round. You raise capital for a building, use that capital to rent a jet, take photos on the jet to prove how successful the building is, and use those photos to raise capital for the next building.
Exactly. The mechanical definition of a Ponzi scheme. This raises an important question, though, about how we verify assets today.
What do you mean?
Well, Pri's work highlights the unique danger of this modern era. The systems we built to verify trust, the banking regulations, the title searches, the careful underwriting, they still exist.
Yeah, they haven't gone anywhere.
But they are being completely bypassed by people who have figured out how to hack human psychology through social media and unregulated LLC syndications.
They are hacking the handshake. You know, the ledger doesn't lie, but a profile picture can. That is a direct quote from Pri's report, and it really summarizes the entire crisis.
It really does.
He proves that we are living in a time where we verify assets the wrong way. We look at a blue check mark, a follower count, and a photo with a wrapper, and we just accept that as a verified schedule of real estate owned.
It completely upends the traditional safeguards of the industry. The tragic part is that the victims, these middle-class investors looking for a way out of the daily grind, they didn't know how to navigate the shadows of commercial equity.
They didn't have a Pri in their corner.
Exactly. They didn't have an advocate or an investigator like Pri to look at the pro forma and say, the underlying math here physically cannot support these payouts. They just saw the crowd cheering and wanted to be part of the inner circle.
So when we zoom out and look at everything Pri uncovers in this Midnight Ledger case file, what does this all mean? What's the final verdict here?
The bottom line of Pri's report is as sharp as it gets. Cesar Pina did not invent the Ponzi scheme. Charles Ponzi did that a century ago.
Right.
But Pina optimized it for the age of clout. We have truly entered a highly dangerous era where a verified badge acts as a license to steal, where a commercial building is no longer an asset-generating yield, but just a stage prop.
Just a background set for a social media post.
Okay. Exactly. When an investment is promoted by an aesthetic rather than a verifiable, mathematically sound pro forma, the risk is entirely on the investor. The influencer premium is a tax paid by the unwary.
And Pri's definitive rule for commercial real estate, which honestly should be the golden rule for anyone even thinking about investing a single dollar, is this. If you can't see the deed, you aren't an investor. You're the revenue.
You're the revenue. It shifts your entire perspective on what a transaction really is. You aren't buying a piece of the pie. You are the pie.
Yeah. That's a chilling way to put it.
And it reinforces why we need actual investigators who live in the ledgers, who understand zoning and yield, to cut through the noise of the influencers. Because the influencers are playing a completely different game.
They really are. The old banker's handshake had its flaws, certainly. But it required you to look someone in the eye, examine the actual paperwork, and agree on something tangible.
Which is how it should be.
Yeah. But today, that physical reality has been outsourced to a digital metric that can be bought, manipulated, and faked. Which leads you with one final thing to ponder as we close out this case file.
Go ahead.
If a verified blue check, a sharp custom suit, and a well-lit celebrity photo can override our basic, fundamental financial common sense so completely that we willingly hand over our life savings to a stranger without ever seeing a single legal document, how much of our everyday decision-making, from the products we buy to the news we believe to the people we inherently trust, is being secretly dictated by the influencer premium? Think about it. We'll see you on the next deep dive.